Happiness only real when shared. Happiness only real when shared. These are some of the final words scribbled by Christopher McCandless before he died from starvation after spending 3 months alone in the Alaskan wilderness in the summer of 1992. The story of McCandless's life, which is immensely fascinating and complex and tragic, was pieced together and told by John Krakauer in his book Into the Wild, which was made into a movie in 2007. I commend the story to you. It was very powerful. As Krakauer tells the story, McCandless grew up in an affluent suburb of Washington, D.C., where he excelled academically and was an elite athlete. He was an incredibly smart guy, had a magnetic personality, seemed to have it all, was poised for whatever life he wanted. But immediately after graduating with honors from Emory University in 1990, he dropped out of sight. He changed his name, gave the entire balance of his savings account to charity, abandoned his car and most of his possessions, and invented an entirely new life for himself, wandering across North America in search of raw, transcendent experience. As the story is told, McCandless' search was guided sort of by an ideal of ultimate freedom, including, as it turned out, freedom from any relationships that might make too much of a claim on him. He traveled around for about 2 years, working odd jobs here and there, hanging out in hippie communes for a while before moving on. And then in April 1992, he embarked on what he called his Great Alaskan Odyssey, the culmination of his existential journey, where he made his way to a vast wilderness area north of Mount McKinley, seeking an intensely romanticized experience of living truly alone, free from everything except the bare realities of the wild. And through a journal that he kept, it is evident that he fared remarkably better than one might expect for a kid from the East Coast with no real experience in hunting or living off the land. But after about 3 months, the solitary, romantic ideal quickly crumbled through a series of really tragic episodes. He became basically trapped in the wilderness by his own weakness due to starvation. His body was found by some hunters a few weeks after he died. And among the last entries in his journal was noted this phrase in all capital letters: "Happiness only real when shared." As I said, the story of Christopher McCandless is incredibly fascinating and complex and tragic. And whenever I read it and saw the movie, it struck a deep chord with me. As his story gets pieced together, it seems more and more as if McCandless simply acted on this fantasy of complete autonomy that really undergirds so much of, I think, the longings of our age, whether we realize it or not. And he sort of just followed through with this fantasy to its logical conclusion and discovered only too late the destructive illusion that it is. I think in this way, McCandless's tragic story is archetypal of our age. See, his adventure was guided by the premise that underlies so much of our posture toward life. That is the presumption that we belong only to ourselves, that any outside authority making claims on us is essentially inherently inhibiting to our flourishing. Now, most of us certainly don't follow it through in the same way McCandless did. But I think his story is almost a parable for us of the ultimate bankruptcy of this posture of radical self-direction, which I think we are tempted to and captive by more than we realize sometimes. See, we all stake our lives on something. And even if we think we are freely choosing whatever it is, what we place our hopes in become our master. Perhaps one of the most ironic aspects of our age is our captivity to this ideal of choice, to the maintenance of some vestige of autonomy no matter what. This grasping of autonomy, which really in the end leaves us completely untethered from everything and everyone, and which ultimately oppresses us with an unimaginable burden of making our own lives come out right. We all stake our lives on something. For McCandless, it was an ideal of complete self-reliance in the search for transcendence and the raw simplicity of life. For some, it might be an ideal or of love or equality or the fact that we always do our duty, unlike Christopher McCandless. For others, it might be a job or our reputation or the success of our children that we sort of stake our lives on. And all of these things, We put our hopes in them because they seem to offer the promise of fulfillment. But in the end, all of these things are insufficient as the ground and goal of our lives, for they require our constant vigilance to maintain. And they are notoriously fragile as idols of ultimate meaning. And in the midst of this tragic landscape of misplaced hopes and insistence on self-direction, we hear a startling claim in our reading from Acts this morning. That is, that this Jesus Christ of Nazareth, this obscure prophet from a small village in Palestine, this guy who was crucified, has been raised from the dead. And in so being, has been shown to be the cornerstone of all reality. And that there is salvation in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven given among mortals by which we must be saved. That might sound like a bizarre thing to claim, that there is salvation in no one else other than this Jesus of Nazareth, this particular person. And to many of us, it may sound sort of downright inappropriate to make such a stark and universal claim about such a particular person. But this startling and bold pronouncement just might be the entry point into the true freedom and peace that our restless hearts most long for, if only we have ears to hear. See, part of the posture of our age is to buck against these such stark particularities. But this resistance that is almost inherent to our way of being will in the end leave us aimless and foundationless. Will leave us searching for a happiness that can actually only be found when claims are made upon us. And the claim of the Scriptures is that it is actually in this one, this man, Jesus Christ of Nazareth. It is in him that all other ways of navigating the world are critiqued and find their resolve. Jesus Christ is the definitive reality of the world, the one who encompasses everything. God, who is sovereign over all and who is utterly incomprehensible, has made himself known to us fully in the person of Jesus Christ. Karl Barth says, "The existence of this man is quite simply the existence of God himself." And in this person, in this human, we are shown the fullness of what are and what all of humanity is and is called to be. Jesus Christ is the determination and revelation of God's purposes for the world. And I know to reckon with these all-encompassing claims might feel like a complete affront to our way of being. And if we're hearing it right, it probably is, actually. But the challenge of Jesus' particularity is also precisely God's grace in action for us. For in the midst of our wandering and our defiance, God comes to us personally, standing before us as Jesus, the Good Shepherd, laying down his life for us and inviting us into freedom from the tyranny of self-shepherding, of having to be the master of our own soul. Now, this claim, to claim the name of Jesus as the only name under heaven given for health and salvation, it's important to note that to claim this does not mean to presume to possess the fullness of truth. Rather, it simply means to consent to the givenness of this divine action as our starting point for navigating the world, for making sense of things. And the good news of this claim is that it is something that holds us more than we hold it. Because I think we all know, sometimes it is just exhausting to stake our lives on things that we have to maintain, be it our own autonomy, or our job, or our own sense of being right, or whatever. These things that we so often give our lives over to and grasp fiercely, these things wear on us. because they are simply not able to bear the weight of all our hopes and longings. They are not able to fix our brokenness. And the promise of the gospel is that they don't have to. In the midst of our captivity to making things come out right or good for ourselves, the gift held out to us in the gospel is the promise that we don't have to be our master of our own journey. So we were not made to be. Rather, the promise of the gospel is an invitation. An invitation to return to the shepherd and guardian of our souls, who laid down his life in order to stake his claim on us, that we might have life and have it more abundantly in him. Jesus Christ is our good shepherd, the one who orients our lives truly. He is the one who leads us faithfully to green pastures, who guides us truly when the darkness and shadows of our lives leave us lost and suffering. And as we consent to his gracious leading, we discover that his goodness and his mercy indeed surround us all of our days. And he ushers us into the true happiness that is only real because God has shared his life with us.